Okay, cool. Well, all right, so we're ready for our first presentation. This is Darius, everyone. His project is IDEL, which I believe does some sandboxing kind of thing. So Darius may start.
Well, hi. Most virtual machines you hear about have a just-in-time compiler. Can you hear me? Well, I think this one has a just-in-time presenter. I'm going to try to make this an interesting talk anyway. So I guess the first question people will have is, what's the point in having another virtual machine? Isn't this what Java is supposed to be for? I think that's a good objection, and Java has been getting more and more usable all this time, but let me talk about the original motivation for it. You see, a long time before Java, there were these papers on agoric computing, and the idea there was to apply economics to computing, free markets for computational resources, and the older operating systems are more like a Soviet-style economy, central planning, and that works okay when you just have one person, just like a Robinson Crusoe economy works okay for just one person, and all the applications are more or less pulling together. But nowadays we're moving into a network world where you're bound to run many applications for different people at the same time on the same computers. You might want your programs to be distributed over multiple computers belonging to different people. And I'm sure this is all mom and apple pie to you people. So the upshot of this is the original agoric paper outlined certain simple requirements for this thing to really work, and they are like, you need computational resources that are ownable and transferable, so you can sell or trade your CPU time, your memory, your bandwidth, just like MojoNet does with file trading. And in fact, that was the original motivation for MojoNation, MNet. Maybe I'll leave all that to Zuko anyway when he comes after me. So now Java might have worked for that, but we've been waiting for years for them to make that be a usable platform for agoric computing, and it's time to try something different. The basic requirements are, we need a security infrastructure that that allows you to own resources and transfer them and be protected between different owners. And the security model that works for that is capability security. The Agoric people have kept working on that, and they've developed new operating systems in language, Eros and E, that work for this. But E is a programming language, just like Java is a programming language. And the other programming languages, when they're compiled to Java, they just don't work all that well on the JVM. It's not language neutral. You come to the new Microsoft stuff, they're not really language neutral. They're designed with more of that in mind, but what they really are is they're taking a bigger set of languages and trying to squeeze everything into that model. On the other hand, we have low-level hardware machines, and everything has to squeeze into that model already. So this is a different approach we're taking. As a bonus, we get greater simplicity in the design. And simplicity translates to greater security. Anyway, I'm going to just jump into some applications to start with, and maybe we can talk some more about the advantages of the design if there's time. So, start off, we're going to need to grab the software and I don't like this keyboard. So we've grabbed software. It's just a simple configure and make to start out with, I'm sure. I'll be awfully embarrassed if it isn't. The code should work on any 32-bit ANSI-C computer, although I haven't adapted it for 64-bit and so on yet. So let's just make sure it's working. Nice, fast computer. Now, the demo applications I've made, the one I want to demo today is the CPU cycle sharing one. And despite all of this fancy talk I've made about computational economies, I'm not going to try to do that here. The transport protocol I'm using is just plain text over the wire. No security to that at all, so this is at present suited just to cooperative sharing among people you know and trust. Well, not people you know and trust, but people who you actually want to cooperate with. We're going to have some larger infrastructure if you want to get paid for what you're doing. Is there a problem?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks for pointing that out.
Nobody missed anything. Okay. Now, I've set up the distribution today to automatically point to a source where you can have a job running. I mean, a source of jobs running. I'm calling that a dealer. So in principle, once you've downloaded, you can just say in Java and start up and start doing things for the dealer if you had some reason to. But as a matter of fact, we don't have a dealer running right now. I'm going to have to log in and start that up. The Java, the network protocol code is in Python. The rest of the stuff is in C. So this stuff only works on Unix at the moment because there's some bug in my Python code. I'm not much of a Python person. Here's what we can do to... The CPU sharing stuff is in the examples directory.
Right.
Thank you very much for reminding that.
split screen. This isn't going to work very well. Now I've got a couple of sample tasks in the distribution. The simplest one just factors numbers. So we started that up and it does nothing. I'm going to go into the other window and start up the Java again. Only locally instead of going to that remote guy. Okay, there. So the way things are going here is I wonder, have most of the audience already looked at this code, or do you want me to give you to take a tour through it or anything? Okay. So we break up the sample app into there are the dealers, there are the jobbers, and there are the tasks. And the dealers take a task and distribute out its subjobs over off to jobbers. So I'm going to show you the code you have to make a new task to run on this. Right. So we simply have a bunch of state variables, and when we get an answer coming in, we're going to set the answer variable. In the meantime, we're just going to wait for a jobber to come in and ask for a job, and that ends up with Steeler calling the get job method. So. This does the factoring in about the simplest possible way. We just literally search through the numbers. And we create a new a job packet for each job that comes along. And eventually the dealer is going to tell you one of two things. Either you got an answer, or for some reason you were not able to get an answer. And finally, it's going to tell you when all the pending jobs have been finished. At the moment, it's up to you. If the job fails, you have to reissue the same job again. That's why we have a separate cleanup. That's one reason we have a separate cleanup thing to call. Here is where it gets esoteric. We do not currently have a compiler for a regular high-level language to the virtual machine. I wanted to make a more language-neutral, low-level virtual machine and get that working first. So what we have instead is basically an assembly language. But it's kind of unusual because it looks a lot like Forth. And that's because the virtual machine architecture is a lot like Forth. And the reasons for that were simplicity. But it's not a slavish copy because there are some problems with Forth as a virtual machine for general purpose languages. Most notably, there's a stack. People have this idea that stack architectures are slow, and the dynamic stack in Forth is a problem for that because it if you have a split in your control path, you can have different stack widths along each one, for example, and then that kind of forces you at least some of the time to simply represent the stack in a native way in memory, and you're not taking advantage of the processor's CPU registers that way. Or you might have a procedure with a dynamic stack effect, like it might stick an array on the stack. That is not what we're doing here. You can instead think of the stack as a set of simply a dynamically sized local set of processor registers, and it's up to the virtual machine compiler to map those onto the CPU registers. When you work out the trade-offs, it seems like either way, when you're doing a compiler, either a register machine or a stack machine is about as easy to do, but the register machine sets an arbitrary hard limit on the number of registers that a compiler has to compile onto, and that's okay when you're compiling direct onto hardware, but when you don't even know how many registers you have in the first place, it's just adding extra complexity for people's compilers. So anyway, back to the code. As I said, it looks a lot like Forth. The way to think of it is a slot on the stack, like the N and the I to the parameters of the testing procedure. Testing is a loop that goes through the range of numbers testing each one. You can think of the parameters as being like registers in effect, and you can expect the compiler to stick them there. There's a straightforward translation from the compiler intermediate representation and the usual ones they use called static single assignment form into this form here. I have a feeling I'm not talking about this very well. Anyway, what it amounts to is that it's functional programming at the machine architecture level. So it can feel a bit unfamiliar to people using it, say. Anyway, the framework also says we can't trust people's answers, so they're the first cut at checking them. You can also go in and double check by submitting jobs to other people that you trust more and compare their work against each other. This method right here is a luxury to help the dealer tell when to time out a job and send it off to someone else. So that's your fascinating example there. The protocol is pretty straightforward. It's just a text protocol with messages for the jobber's asking, hey, can you give me some work? And the dealer might say, yeah, or it might tell you, go to talk to someone else for the work. So I'm envisaging this basic application is something like a circle of people on the same IRC channel might set up things up so they can all profit from each other's work. The reason I'm talking about it in such limited terms is without the encryption infrastructure that I'd like to steal from MNET or E, without yet the computational markets, you're just opening things up to parasites, the computational equivalent of spammers. In fact, just to start out, I made a sample application that spammers might be very interested in once we have hash cash protection against the spammers. The newest example in the code is less trivial than this. It searches for hash cache numbers in parallel for people. I'll explain that. Hash cache is a method people use to protect against their resources getting abused by requiring the other end of a protocol to perform a complicated, time-consuming operation for them before you grant them any resources. In this case, we're using the SHA-1 hash algorithm and looking for collisions to a sample string generated by the server.
Oh, that doesn't show up very well.
This is searching for 18-bit hash collisions right now. Each one of these things scrolling up is an answer returned. I'm not sure how many... I'd like to. I'm not sure how to do that. Is that in the... Oh, yeah, there is a color selector. You want to do that? Most of these are just debugging messages here to show you what's going on. I set a few jobbers running before I left, and they gradually check for jobs less often if there's nothing. So as time goes on, we should be getting more coming online, and it goes faster and faster as they discover that there is work around for them. This 18-bit hash collision takes several seconds on my Pentium Pro. I do not have the I don't have the debugging messages set to tell you which machine these are coming from right now, but it's pretty obvious that there are multiple guys on the network from the speed that things are think they're happening. I tested it this morning, and for this job, the execution time on the interpreter is about 8 times slower than native C.
The microphone out to the audience for them to ask questions and you'd answer.
We're almost out of time, you think?
Yeah, there's 5 minutes left.
Sure. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, you just said that the clients, I am assuming it's the client, takes a longer, the less time or the less work there is for them to do, they do some sort of like a back off where they check less and less frequently. I'm wondering what the for like a client's been sitting quiescent for a while, what's the wake up time for a client that's just been kind of sitting there for a while?
Yeah. Is anyone net connected? I think it would be easier if you just typed it on IRC and I.
Okay. I was just curious if you knew like just how long it would take for something to wake up that's been sitting there for a couple hours and suddenly, oops, it has work.
What was that?
Darius has a hearing problem here.
There's no internet connection.
Yeah. Zuko, would you mind like typing out the questions for him that people ask?
Yeah. Okay. You understand the question, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, okay. I think the question is, if a client's sitting idle for a long time and then a job arrives for it, how long does it take that client to respond?
Yeah.
Just switch windows, do scratch or something.
System. He said it employs some sort of a back off system where it waits progressively longer and longer when it's quiescent to check for new work.
Let me say what I wrote. I wrote, if a client is idle for a long time, how often does it check for new work?
Good idea. It backs off to a configure a limit, which is 5 minutes at the moment in the distributed system. And if it keeps missing work for enough times, it just quits right now. You can set it up to look at a number of different dealer servers. And in fact, the dealer can reply that there's some other server that you don't know about right now, and then it'll start looking over there for work. If it quits on one, there might still be work for it.
Thank you. Any questions?
Wait.
I have a quick question. You'd mentioned that pre-computing some SHA-1 hash collisions was required before your work was accepted as a kind of, protection against malicious peers or resource exploits. Will this be removed when an Agoric platform is present, or do you continue to use this mechanism for preventing abuse?
As a matter of fact, I was using this as just a demo application that I thought was kind of related. I don't think that has very much place in an Agora platform, except as a possible source of money. The way you protect against malicious attacks is you simply put your resources under ownership, and then if somebody wants to use it, they have to pay you enough for it that you're willing to give it to them. Now, if you're running on regular internet protocols, there's obviously a limit to how much of that you can do when you go down to the lowest levels. For example, you can have ping flood attacks. One answer to that is go to an Agoric style of network protocols also. And there have been papers on that also. It's called the Digital Silk Road. It's an interesting paper. Maybe I should put up the hyperlink. I think
okay,
it's
so in another like 2 or 3 minutes, I'll stop in and say it's
I think that's where you can get the original papers I was talking about. The ones by Mark Miller and Eric Drexler. In fact, I would really rather all of you just read those papers and ignore my talk, except this is CodeCon, and I have to present my code instead.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Is there a basic unit of currency for the resource negotiation? Is it like CPU time, or are there different currencies for different capabilities?
I may have made things unclear. The situation right now is the virtual machine itself right now does not have any built-in monetary resources. The way to get there from here, right now, in fact, we just have just ordinary quotas. The way to get from there from here is first we institute a set of capability mechanisms in function and make the resources metered under a capability, and you can transfer those capabilities between different processes, and then you can decide how you want to manage the exchange. It's not, the mechanisms don't care. And you can, as a bonus, you can use the capabilities to create a local currency because they're unforgeable and so on. To really make a full computational economy, you also need distributed monies as well. And the way I know of that can make that actually work is you have a bank on one system or possibly a distributed system, but it's logically one system, and that acts as a clearinghouse, and you have one form of crypto or another to handle that. The capabilities can give you an abstraction layer over that so that you have simple object-oriented programming instead of complicated cryptographic protocol design to make that work. And to find out about that, there are some interesting writings on that site. I have to emphasize this is not my work I'm talking about. I'm simply trying to provide a platform for that to work on.
Okay, we have time for one more question.
Yeah, I was wondering if you sandbox the VM.
If you sandbox the VM?
Yeah, or is there a sandbox model involved? There's some model of protecting the local system from malicious code.
Right, that's a high priority. The code itself is it's a low-level system, but the amount of memory it can use is bounded. It's like a Unix process in effect. The amount of CPU time it can use is also bounded, and its memory accesses all have to be within the sandbox. The way that works is we don't have any fancy type system. We simply check the relevant accesses, or it counts the number of procedure calls happening, and when you view too many, that gets an exception. And several years back in the mid-90s, Calusa made a product like that called Omniware, and they reported efficiencies within 10 or 15% of optimized native code. I'm not there in this system right now, but I believe you can get similar performance with an efficient design. Is it time for you to talk now?